Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of the NBA page, and it is the middle of the NBA season already, which is kind of crazy. It went pretty fast because we were busy trying to figure out who the 61st best player in the G League was and who was getting called up. And with all that craziness, it's gone quickly, and we're at the midseason, which means it's time to bring in Dan Feldman from NBC and talk about our midseason NBA awards. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. This should be interesting because some of the awards were certainly challenging based on just, you know, who's been in and out of the lineup, and I think it's thrown some things off a little more than others. I don't quite know what to do with Coach of the Year and a couple others. We'll get to those. I feel like we got to start with MVP though, which is something we did publish on Monday. And when you're talking most valuable player for the 21-22 season, you and I are on the same page right now, but it's a crowded field, Dan.
It is. It goes five deep. I think everybody was kind of looking at it as a one-man race, and then there's talk of two, and then maybe three, and then four. And at this point, I'm at five legitimate candidates.
Yeah. You and I both had Giannis Antetokounmpo on top of it. What made you put Giannis on top of – look, Steph Curry had been – the guy out of the gates, right? The Warriors have been off to the fast start. He has been playing phenomenally. He's hit a little mini slump, but I think part of it is that the league's caught up to him too a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if the league's caught up so much as, you know, if you're a shooter like him, there are going to be moments there where the shot just isn't falling. A couple games in a row and in a close race that bumps you down a spot or two. I think you had him second, I had him third, but it was close before. It's not like, oh, he had two off shooting games and now I think he's terrible. That happens to even the best shooter of all time every once in a while, and I'm sure he'll get back on track, and over the season his shooting numbers will be excellent. But Giannis's ability to create quality shots at the rim, to convert those shots. He's obviously excellent defensively, too.
Yeah.
He's just carrying such a load for this Bucks team, like he usually does. I could point to a couple small spots where it's even bigger than usual. With Brook Lopez gone, I think he has a little bit more rim protection responsibility. I'm having a hard time exactly putting my finger on the why. You know, they still have Drew Holiday. They have George Hill as a backup who knows Mike Budenholzer's system. But Giannis is doing a little more playmaking than usual for them, too. Maybe that's just because Giannis is that good at it. I mean, these are the reasons I have him number one for MVP.
Yeah, I had him just ahead as well for much the same reasons. I think, A, his role got changed, right? This isn't exactly the same because Brook Lopez is out. You know, Bobby Portis is starting at center, but we're getting a lot more Giannis at the five lineups, which was kind of always their most dangerous lineup anyway, Dan. It was the one that scared a lot of teams, but I think that's part of it. And part of it is when you look at him compared to Curry and Jokic and LeBron James and Kevin Durant, which are the five we both had at the top five in slightly different orders, but that was our top five. He's the best defender of the group. And that's still a boost for me. That's a bump. I had Curry second. You had Jokic second. He's putting up. He's been better than last year, Dan.
Yes, I mean he's been phenomenal. He does everything offensively. He can score in every way. I think the best passing center of all time.
Yeah.
He's just doing everything for them offensively, and you know, with his size, with his intelligence, he still helps defensively. He's not as good defensively as some of his advanced stats look. I think there's some misleading things going on with rebounding there. But getting defensive rebounds is important. He's a reasonable enough defender. I think sometimes we've overreacted to small ball. Being small is not an advantage. It is a big advantage to be tall. If you're tall in basketball, it helps. Now, it comes with drawbacks oftentimes, right? A lot of times, historically, bigs were less skilled. Bigs didn't move as well. Now, he might not move as well. He's definitely not less skilled, and because of his size, he's in position to make a lot of things happen. That's why I had him second. It's close, though. I wouldn't quibble with Curry. What had you have Curry a little bit ahead?
By the way, I think the other thing you've got that really stands out when you look at Jokic for me, and this was from a couple days ago, so it might have tweaked, but they're 22.5 points per 100 better when he's on the floor. That's a ridiculous number, Dan.
So that's an interesting number. It's an important number, but I guess it depends how you look at it, because the Warriors are awesome with Curry on the floor. The Nuggets are awesome with Jokic on the floor. And to me, I want to know more so, hey, how good is this team with this player on the floor to get a sense of his individual value? And to me, I look at the on-off. For me, most valuable player, I don't want to base it on, well, the Warriors have a better backup point guard than the Nuggets have a better backup center. I don't think that should factor. To me, I'm only looking at the on-off to get a sense of Jokic's teammates, his floor mates, to see how much help he has. He obviously is lacking help with the injuries they've had. That there's something to that. But I don't want to overreact to the idea like his backups are more inadequate than Curry's backups.
Yeah. By the way, part of what has it worked for me for Curry was that I think what he brings to the team, they've been better able to utilize this year with the maturation of Jordan Poole, plus just the guys they brought in. Bringing back Iguodala, having Bielitsa there, just veterans, more high IQ players. You know, last year they had, like, they gave James Wiseman a lot of minutes. He'll be back, and we'll see how he's matured. But he was a rookie running around with his head cut off, right? Like a chicken with his head cut off. He was just kind of all over the place. Well, Kevon Looney got healthy, and he's a solid NBA center who started in finals games. Like, you can sense just how much better they use what Curry brings, and it highlights what Curry brings, which is, even during the shooting slump, you can't leave the guy. Like, you're going to warp your defense by having to have somebody 35 feet out, and when he gets the ball, you might bring a second guy 35 feet out from the basket. And that just... what that does in terms of warping your defense is still, it's just hard to calculate. And Kevin Durant does it in a different way, and Giannis Antetokounmpo does it in a different way, but it's really evident what Curry does, and their offense doesn't flow the same way when he's not there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the advantage of his playing style, is even when those shots aren't falling, when he has this mini slump, the effect he provides on spacing is still there. A lot of it is that volume, is that fear. There is value in that. When we say, like, oh, even a great shooter is susceptible to an off shooting game, okay, so you're not converting those efficient points. That matters. That matters a lot. But you're still helping your team. And Curry does other things too. He's an underrated defender. He's a willing passer. He's unselfish. He plays with a great spirit. I think he brings a lot of joy to that team. I think those are things that matter. They're hard to assess. But when I'm looking at MVP, I'm looking at the total package of how much you help your team win. And there are a lot of things about not just the spacing and the things on the court, but Curry's temperament, his leadership. Those things matter too. I think Giannis has that. I mean, it's hard to find anybody in this race who doesn't have that. Jokic has that. All these players that we're talking about now have that, but Curry especially has it.
And I think any of them could come up and win this thing. If Denver got hot, I think, how much do you hold Denver's, and I guess this applies to LeBron as well, how much do you hold the lack of team success against them?
LeBron's a little more interesting because he has something to do with this roster building, although I'm trying not to hold that against him for this player award. Not really. I'm looking for the best player, the player who's having the best season. The Nuggets' problem is not Nikola Jokic. The Lakers' problem is not LeBron James. These teams are kind of muddling along despite their stars doing everything they can to drag these teams higher.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, I think any one of them could rise up and win this thing, right? Like, if you told me Kevin Durant got hot and the Nets got hot, and he could surge from fifth on my list here easily up. And the other guy I want to mention, I mentioned him in my comments with the award. He's now got seven straight 30-plus games. Joel Embiid is playing out of his mind lately and could insert himself into this conversation if this continues. He's missed too much time to this point.
So that's right. I agree with you that any of these five could win it. I'm not sure all five of them are going to be on the year-end ballot, right? It's not like they're leaps and bounds ahead. And I'm not even sure Joel Embiid is the top center challenger to get on the ballot. It might be Rudy Gobert, who has been awesome defensively, ultra-efficient offensively, just playing so well. I think Joel Embiid has a far better chance of winning MVP, and Rudy Gobert might have a better chance of getting onto a ballot. Gobert doesn't have that upside. He's steadier. But you could look back at the end of the year and say, yeah, you know what? Rudy Gobert had the fourth or fifth best season in the league.
He can.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We have also agreed, we posted on Tuesday, Rookie of the Year, and you and I both agreed, Evan Mobley for that award. Look, he's putting up counting stats. His numbers are nice. For a rookie, 14.8 points, 8.1 rebounds a game is good. But I think you would agree what really separates him is he's been so good defensively.
Oh, yeah. And it's rare you see rookies do that. Even the ones who come in with the tools, they don't have the awareness of how to play NBA defense. But he comes in and he's such a big reason for making that three big lineup work in Cleveland. And he's flashed some things offensively. I think he was maybe a little hot offensively to start the year. And so expectations have come back down there. But he is shooting from the perimeter, just like we were talking about with Steph Curry. His efficiency isn't great, but if you have to defend him out there, that changes the spacing. There's something to that. He showed some ball handling, some passing, some finishing. I really like his potential too. Sometimes we talk about Rookie of the Year where it's, well, this guy came in ready to play and I don't know about his ceiling. And maybe this is a better description of the player we have second or third in the race. Franz Wagner in Orlando, but he's come in ready to play. Mobley, I see so many areas for improvement too, as good as he already is.
By the way, Franz Wagner is maybe the rookie story of the year, right? I mean, not like it was a lottery pick, but you're a Michigan guy. You didn't see this coming.
I didn't see the scoring like this. No, and he is leading rookies in points per game. And I wonder, though, what if Cade Cunningham started off healthy and were scoring better? What if Jalen Green came in better and scoring better? Because what is Wagner averaging? It's about 15 points, a little less than that. So I think it might get hyped up because he's the leading rookie scorer. Definitely didn't expect that element of his game so soon or even at all. But if a couple other rookies were scoring 16 points a game, maybe even 17, and he were down on the list, maybe it wouldn't be looked at as quite the same story, but he is scoring well. He's doing other things. He's got good defensive recognition, good positional defending, and he has a nice all-around game. I'm not sure he has the ceiling, but if he's good already, he's young. He looks like he's going to be a real good player for a long time.
Scotty Barnes would also be on my list in Toronto, and another guy with very similar counting stats, 14 points, 8 rebounds a game, to Evan Mobley, and another guy who not quite the same level of defense, but he's shown real defensive potential already.
I'm not surprised by the defensive potential. It's not like he's a great shooter, but he's a decent enough shooter, and I did not expect that. It looked like his shot was going to be real troublesome. I think I had him fifth, maybe sixth on my draft board coming into the year, somewhere in that range. Still high, but I was down on him relative to a lot of people because I was just unconvinced by the shot. It's hard to succeed as a perimeter player if you don't have that jump shot. And he's all right with it already, and maybe it'll get better. I would assume it will get better at this point, considering this improvement. I don't know. Do you remember any player who had a question mark about his shooting ability to come in as a rookie? And he hasn't answered. He's not a good shooter yet, but to be this far ahead, I don't know. It's a rare thing for him to improve so much between playing college and in the NBA, and that obviously bodes well the things about his work ethic and his approach.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's usually not that quick with shooting. And usually in a couple of years, you're like, oh, hey, he's really developed into a solid shooter. But it's not as quick as we've seen with Barnes. I think Cade Cunningham could be in this conversation by the end. He's played a lot. But he obviously was injured, missed most of camp, struggled with his shot out of the gate, especially around the rim, but just struggled in general. Then had COVID, but has played a lot better of late, and it hit 29 the other night against what was left of the Jazz. No Rudy Gobert, no Ingles, no... it was Donovan Mitchell against the world again, but he's played better of late. And like I said in that story, if you tell me Jalen Green suddenly gets hot and goes Anthony Edwards in the second half of the year, like I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. The potential's there. There, you know, I'm still not convinced those were the wrong picks to go higher. They've got the ability, but you know, Jalen Green, he just doesn't look as ready for the NBA as I would have expected having played professionally the year before. Cunningham was just health, and so as he settles in, I think he's got that stronger chance to rise.
Well, let's move on to some of the awards where I don't know what you've picked. We've published those two. I don't know who you've picked for some of these other awards, so I'm really curious to hear, because let's go to the one I struggle the most with, which I mentioned before, Coach of the Year. Everybody in and out of the lineups, coaches in and out of the lineup. It's been really, to me, in some ways, it's spoken to culture in a lot of ways for, and I don't know how much of that, I mean, the coach certainly deserves credit for that culture, but the culture goes beyond just the coach. But who do you have for Coach of the Year?
I have JB Bickerstaff on the Cavs. The way he has made this three big lineup work, I think is very impressive. I like the player development I'm seeing in Cleveland. The lineups he's used to get multiple point guard types on the floor together, working well together with Darius Garland. And when they were healthy, Ricky Rubio and Colin Sexton, those worked really well. Not really sure where they're going to go with it. Now, if he gets Rajon Rondo to come in and help the Cavs, I'll be even more impressed.
Yes.
You know, Rondo is not the same player he was, but you know, if that can work out over a period of time, that would definitely boost Bickerstaff's resume. I don't think he's leaps and bounds above. There are plenty of other candidates who are reasonable, but he's the one I'm going with right now. Who do you have at this point?
I went with Tyler Jenkins, the Memphis coach, who's what has impressed me is, hey, you know, it's not, hey, just Ja Morant's here. Ja Morant goes out for a dozen games, and they went 10-2. Like Desmond Bain has made a leap. He's got these guys buying in. Top to bottom, I didn't love trading for, you know, the move they made with Valanciunas and bringing in Steven Adams, and it's worked. Everything he's really got. This is a couple, and this is, I've seen this, I think, for a couple of years from them. He's really good at player development. He's really got them buying into a style of play, and they sit as a very comfortable fourth seed in the West, which I think is a shock. So I have him. I'm with you. It's not a runaway. I think Bickerstaff is on my list. Obviously, that Steve Kerr guy. He's done pretty good. I think Monty Williams, obviously in Phoenix, Billy Donovan.
Yeah,
with the Bulls.
Billy Donovan was probably my number two. Yeah. You know, some weird fits in that lineup we weren't sure about before the year. Yeah. But he's put everybody together in a nice way. He's been unafraid to go with guys sort of unconventional spots, like DeMar DeRozan's playing a lot of power forward. Like, a lot of it's working, and he's just putting the talent out there and putting it in a position. See, that's what you want to see as a coach. Everybody you mentioned is also on my list to throw out one more, Quinn Snyder with the Jazz. He has something to do with them just lapping the field in offensive rating. You know, it's tough. Coach of the year, I get hung up on of the year. So somebody like Monty Williams, who's doing an excellent job, I dock him just a little bit because I think he did an excellent job last year, and a lot of this was already in place. They're just continuing where they left him. Not that he's still not doing a good job and integrating new pieces and continuing to grow where the Suns are even more. Like, that's why he's in the discussion. It's one of the reasons I'm nitpicking and have him not in my top two.
Yeah, I would also throw Eric Spoelstra in the mix as a guy who's really gotten a lot out of a lineup that has seen guys in and out, not just for COVID, but I mean, Bam Adebayo's thumb and Jimmy Butler's everything, right? Is there anything that's not hurting on him? It's been a great year. I think that's an award. Like I said, we were naming our midseason picks. That's another one where I'm like, that could really go any direction by the end of the year. We'll see where people are.
And with the Heat, it's these deep reserves coming in and helping. It's not that like they're just getting by because Spoelstra knows how to get the ball to their top players. He's putting these other guys in position to succeed. Their player development system is so incredible. Nick Nurse with the Raptors. I mean, the more we talk about Coach of the Year, the more names that can come up, and especially in a turbulent year like this, where I do think a lot of coaches have an opportunity to thrive because, you know, I think when I say of the year, I'm looking for a coach with an opportunity to really put his imprint on a team. So if you've been on the same team, coaching the same team with the same veterans for a long time, it's harder for you to really show your coaching ability. Well, who has that type of continuity this year outside of Utah?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing something so impressive offensively that you still want to give Quinn Snyder credit.
Yeah. I think you could, by the way, you could argue Matt Budenholzer much, this, you know, missing Brook Lopez, who was so key for them much of the year, and they've been able to adapt and adjust too. So, speaking of the Bucks and a good defensive team, let's jump to Defensive Player of the Year. Rudy Gobert is in the mix because he's always in the mix, but I kind of got to go with Draymond Green leading the best defense in the league this year. He has been absolutely phenomenal on that end, as he's been for years, but I think he's, with the players around him now, his ability to quarterback that defense into being elite has been unbelievable.
Yeah, for me, flip a coin between Gobert and Draymond Green. I went with Rudy Gobert, making the same impact that he always does in the regular season as a rim protector. He's moving well enough on the perimeter. He's not a liability by any means out there. He's good enough to put himself in the positions where he really succeeds. He cleans up on the glass. He blocks shots. He alters shots. I don't love the Jazz's defensive personnel on the perimeter. Makes up for a ton of it.
They leave him on an island. They actually, that's one of the things that you hear around the league when I've talked to some sources with teams, like the Jazz are looking for wing defenders because they realize they just, at some point, Rudy can't clean it all up, man.
Right. But there's a winning formula there, at least in the regular season. I would rather have Draymond Green in the playoffs.
Yes.
I think his versatility, his intelligence, not that Rudy Gobert turns into a bad defender. I have them neck and neck in the regular season. I have Gobert slightly ahead, but to me, it's only a regular season award. I'm not projecting what I think I would get from you in the playoffs. So I got Gobert very slightly ahead, and then Draymond. Did you have anybody else in the mix? Like, all due respect to Giannis, who I guess I would have third. I didn't, we only picked our winner for this. I didn't hammer out exactly why I had third, but I didn't see anybody else that I really felt was quite right there in the conversation for winning it.
Actually, I use this exercise when we do it midseason as a chance to start my my vote list for the end of the year and put this pull the spreadsheet up and start filling it in a little bit. And I treat it a little more in some ways like a college football awards watch list, like, all right, so here are the 12 coaches I should be, we should really think about more and stuff as we go on. I had Giannis Antetokounmpo as the other guy kind of in that mix because he's such a good perimeter defender. But again, he's been asked to do a lot more shot blocking, a lot more stuff in the paint this year. And he's kind of thrived in that role. And they needed probably do more Giannis at the five in previous years, but he's been unbelievable in that role this year. So I don't really have a problem with it. I think he's the third one, and then I'm not sure who's fourth. Honestly, I think that there's a bit, like you said, I think that there's kind of a gap there.
Yeah. You know, even at the end of the year, you only got to go to 3 on your ballot, so you can stop there.
I always feel more comfortable when you've got guys jockeying for position, and maybe I'm selling Miles Turner or someone a little bit short. We'll see where he's playing the second half of the year, and then we'll see what kind of defensive impact he ultimately has. That's going to be an interesting one. Indiana is such a weird team, by the way, Dan. That is just, you look at their advanced stats, you're like, how are they so bad? And you're like, oh, because they can't close a game to save their lives. And everybody wants a bigger role in the offense. It's just a mess.
We didn't mention Rick Carlisle for Coach of the Year, although I think some of this is just bad luck.
I don't think it's all on him, yeah. One of the ones that's really been challenging this year, maybe the hardest one in some ways, just because everybody's in and out of the lineup, sixth man of the year. It's weird because the guy who I think has been the best sixth man, Jalen Brunson, isn't a sixth man. He's actually started too many games in Dallas. He's kind of on the watch list portion of this. I think you could say the same thing for Jordan Poole, who they pictured as a sixth man in Golden State. And now that Clay's back, we'll move back to that role. But kind of started a lot of games for them, and I'm not sure if we'll see where it is at the end of the season. Who did you have for sixth man of the year?
Oh, no. I didn't look closely enough. I had Jalen Brunson. Oh, well, I'm glad you saved me from that. Now I got to scramble and see. I'll tell you who I really wanted to pick, and maybe by the end of this conversation I'll do it. A lot of me really wants to pick Gary Payton II.
Ooh.
Let me start with the problems. He doesn't play that much. He's only playing it's less than 17 minutes a game. And to me, it's hard to make a big impact as big as somebody playing, you know, high 20s, low 30s when you're playing so much less. He also doesn't really have much creation responsibility. You know, that's a real premium skill to drive. These are reasons I have Jalen Brunson number one, and I can't. But man, Gary Payton has been awesome defensively. He's playing a role that works for him offensively. Yeah. His shooting has come right. He's making his threes. He's cutting. He's fitting in. He's really helping this team win. He makes such a positive impact as little as he plays, as little playmaking responsibility he has with the ball. I want to pick him. Another guy I kind of want to pick is Kevin Love.
Yeah,
he's playing awesome. He's low in minutes too, right? Like part of the reason he can play so well, and this probably applies to Gary Payton II also, they can be so successful per minute because they don't have the same burden. Then you can go on the other side of somebody like Tyler Hero, who's probably overburdened right now with the too big of a role. They're asking too much of him. He's not quite as efficient as he should be, but he's still putting up numbers. He's playing that big role. He's doing all right in it. And then you can maybe find a couple middle ground candidates, somebody like Montrezl Harrell, real solid. Kelly Oubre has been shooting well, where they have the right blend of, you know, they've been more efficient. Their role isn't quite as big. Cameron Johnson with the Suns is having a real nice year. I don't know. It was a close race, and I talked myself into Jalen Brunson, and now that I can, I don't know what to do. Who did you have?
Yeah, I would have had Jalen Brunson on top just for that. I've actually went with one of your middling candidates. I had Montrezl Harrell because just ahead of Tyler Hero, and I would have probably Kevin Love third right now, but it'd be close. There's a lot that could shift there. What Trez is doing reminds me of what he did a couple of years ago when he won it with the Clippers. And that is just, they're just better with him on the floor. When he makes that, he brings that burst of energy, puts up some numbers, but more importantly, they're plus 8.3 per 100 when he's on. He brings a boost of energy and they're using him better. The Lakers were all excited to steal him from that down the hall, but why he thrived with the Clippers was that he and Lou Williams had this just magical pick and roll chemistry that was impossible for teams to stop, at least during the regular season. Putting them on the floor together during the playoffs turned out to be a defensively problematic, let's say. but it was a great regular season formula. The Lakers get him and they don't really use him in the pick and roll as much. They've got him playing out of the dunker spot and cutting more and just kind of not using the same way. And his numbers go down and he's not happy. He gets to Washington and it's back to a lot of pick and roll. And he's back to thriving kind of in the role he's comfortable with. So I've got him, but like you said, I think Tyler Hero's in that mix. Kevin Love, everybody you mentioned, I would throw Jordan Clarkson again in Utah, is always putting up always solid numbers. To me, if Brunson, I guess the question is how much longer he starts. He's been starting a little bit next to Jokic. I mean, next to Jokic. That would be a whole different problem. next to Doncic. But are they going to continue that? Or I don't know. You know, we'll see what Jason Kidd ends up doing. They've wanted a second shot creator next to Doncic for years. Maybe Jalen Brunson is the answer to that, and he starts. But he would have been my sixth man of the year. And then, again, Jordan Poole's the same kind of thing. I'm not sure. We'll see where his numbers are at the end of the year and how many games he started versus come off the bench.
Yeah, Brunson, 21 starts, 18 games off the bench. So could go either way with how they
manage the lineup for the rest of the way. It depends on what Kevin Love will. I'm Kevin Love. Jason Kidd. I'm just going to start naming random players. It depends on what Jason Kidd wants to do with him the rest of the season and how they – and, of course, the other part of that is injuries and COVID there too, which is just thrown – Tyler Hero had to start for a while. That's always a risk with the mid-year sixth man of the year. It's like, he's playing so well, they just bump him into the starter role because that's what they probably should have been doing. And if he gets healthy, by the way, and plays more, a month ago, I might have had Derrick Rose in this conversation. So we'll see where that ends.
Yeah, he has a chance. I guess at this point, if I got to pick, I think I'm going with, you make a real good case for Harrell. And I could go between him and Kevin Love.
I love Love. Yeah, he's been such a great story.
Yeah. I don't know. Oubre, it's so balanced. And it's not like Jalen Brunson is leaps and bounds ahead of these players. I had to, talk myself into him. But I think at this point, I would go with Kevin Love. Yeah. He's playing so well for them. He's shooting from distance. He's spacing the floor. He's helping on the glass as a rebounder. He's not playing as many minutes, but he's still producing. And in some ways, that's working, right? The fact that his ego's allowing him to play fewer minutes, let this big front court that we keep talking about with the Cavs get those opportunities. Like, he's coming in and he's playing a really good complimentary game that works for him, that works for his team. I'm going with Kevin Love. I guess I'd probably have Montrezl Harrell second and Gary Payton around third. I don't know. I love Gary Payton's candidacy. He's playing awesome for them. I feel like he could get more minutes. I don't think he's getting into the starting lineup in Golden State.
No, I think their backcourt's going to set. Yeah.
Right. But he could get more playing time. I don't know what position he is. He's kind of positionless the way he plays. But he could get more minutes. I don't want him to get a bigger role offensively. I think that'd be bad for him. I think that'd be bad for his case. But if he gets more minutes, more opportunities to help his team, he could sky up. He's playing so great.
Yeah, and I think Tyler Hero is another guy who's just could could get healthy. He could settle into his role and really thrive in the second half of the year and run away. I don't want to say run away with this award, but kind of jump into the a position where he takes it.
Yes. I mean, the reason he's taking on too big of a role is because they've had these injuries.
Oh, yeah.
Right. If they could get him back and he gets his efficiency balanced a little bit better with his volume, he has the potential. Absolutely. I think he has a very high potential to win this award by the end, in part because of how voters are going to reward his volume scoring.
Yep.
And then in part because he actually might end up deserving it at the end.
Yeah, it's true. The sixth and final thing we're doing for midseason awards, we're not getting into all rookie team or all NBA midseason, although I think from listening to us, you can get a pretty good sense of what the all NBA would look like. Although forward becomes a problem, right? The first team all NBA, just because usually I try to match it up with my top five MVP. I want the five best players, right? But LeBron, Kevin, and Durant, and Giannis Antetokounmpo all play forward, so somebody has to go to the second unit, and some guard has to get bumped up. That's a discussion for another day, Dan, but it's an interesting... I mean, does Trae Young jump up? Who's your second best guard?
Chris Paul.
No, Chris Paul's a good call. Yeah.
We could maybe put LeBron at center by the end of the year.
Yeah. It's very possible. Giannis is playing. Then you got to bump Jokic. So there's that problem. The other award, though, that really is difficult to pick mid-year, but we'll take a shot at it. Most improved player, just because I think that that's something that evolves a little bit over the course of the season. I would actually have two Grizzlies at the top of the list, Desmond Bane and Ja Morant. Where are you going?
So I have two Grizzlies in my top three. The other one in my top three is Cole Anthony.
Yeah.
And I went with Ja Morant, number one, and then Bane third. Morant, his leap from very good into like just clear absolute star has been impressive. Yeah. The way he's gotten his 3-point shooting down, even greater control offensively, making big impacts defensively. That block the other day was just incredible.
That's insane, isn't it?
Yes. But I think Cole, if you just did like video game style player ratings of, you know, this guy went from a 50 to an 80 or whatever, I think Cole Anthony has made a bigger jump. He was pretty lousy last year and he's solid this year. But I just don't think the degree of difficulty in that range is quite as high as where Ja Morant was operating. Yeah. And Morant made a big leap in that way of looking at it too.
Yeah. I might have had Bane. I originally had Bane number one and I almost talked myself into Ja Morant and I still might before we publish this, but I had Desmond Bane one, Ja Morant two. And then I have Cole Anthony in a mix with, I think there's a lot of guys who are in the mix. DeJounte Murray has stepped forward. Darius Garland has had a good year. Miles Bridges in Charlotte. Jordan Poole, who we were talking about earlier, kind of thrust into a bigger role and has thrived. Cole Anthony, obviously. There's a lot of guys who've kind of taken steps this year. But for me, I mean, Bane has made maybe the most surprising one, and that's kind of why I had him one. I just never thought he'd be this player.
No, me neither. And I liked him a lot coming into the league, but it was more of a limited role, his spot-up shooting, his defense, his physicality, yeah. What he's doing with the ball, the ability to put the ball on the floor. I did not expect that at all from him ever in his career. I'm glad you have him number one, because one of the things I can't stand is this bias against second-year players for most improved player. The idea that this is the one award where you're supposed to improve, as if we apply that to any other award. Well, this guy shouldn't win Rookie of the Year. He was the number one pick. He was supposed to be good. This guy shouldn't win MVP. He was All-NBA last year. He's supposed to be good. I don't know why we apply that only for most improved player. So it warms my heart that you have a second-year player at the top of your list.
I do, but I do count that in. Like, I expect second and third year players to be better. Like, you're still on an improvement curve, but to me, like, how much did you outshine that? I don't want to say expected curve, but if like you're supposed to be a little bit better, and then you make the leap Desmond Bane did, like that's eye popping. And so I go with that over. And I've got a lot of young players in there. Darius Garland's in his third year, and part of what's made work for him is they finally given him the ball. Part of that's the unfortunate injury to Colin Sexton, who I just feel for that guy going into a contract year and having that happen with the knee. We'll see what happens. He's an interesting offseason case, Dan, but that's a discussion for another day. But Desmond Bane, Ja Morant have both just made a leap. Garland has been there. I think DeJounte Murray is maybe the most underrated improved player in the league. Like, nobody's watching the Spurs, but he's been so good this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's been excellent, really honing his all-around game. His offensive efficiency, as a scorer, isn't there. He's taking on a bigger load than he has in the past, but the efficiency has dropped off some, which is a knock, right? Like, to me, if we're talking – he has improved, don't get me wrong, but if we're talking about who's improved very most in the league, I'm looking for somebody who checks all the boxes, right? They took on a bigger load and got more efficient while doing it. It's a hard thing to pull off, but I think some of the guys we're talking about ahead of him have done that.
I agree. That's the six awards we're going through right now. We will be back later in the week to part of the reason we're not doing all NBA right now is we'll be back with our podcast later in the week. Dan and I will be discussing our all-star selections, where you might hear Ja Morant's name again, although guard in the West, that's a challenge, Dan. It's deep.
The only discussion is going to be whether Ja Morant is a starter or if he's coming off the bench, and it's a close one.
Yeah, it is. I the second guard spot. We'll discuss it. I haven't. It's funny. I have not sent in my ballot yet for that, and I feel pretty good about Steph Curry getting one of the guard spots. I feel comfortable with that one. But that second guard spot in the West, and then how you round out that roster. every year I say this, I do not envy the coaches having to make, they're the ones stuck with the ugly cuts at the end of the, where there's just a few too many deserving players.
Yes, to me, the fun one, if you follow religiously the NBA's positional designations, and I guess we'll have to hash out how much we want to do that, gets the sixth best front court player in the East. And get to five, all right. But once you get to six, it's a little dicier.
Oh, you want to have some fun? And I did this with my pick when I, you know, on three things the other day when I said my all-star starters. I have DeMar DeRozan starting as the other backcourt player in the East. He has not played a minute of guard play this year. Like, he is a forward.
Right, right. So,
but a 6'6 forward who's really a wing and could be, it's like, Dan, you know what'd be better? If the NBA just did away with positions. But we'll discuss that all, or did away with positional seating for the All-Star game. But we can discuss that on later this week when we get to discussing the All-Stars. Dan, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll be back later in the week with more Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.